Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody. It is Sunday afternoon, evening. It's evening. I am getting ready to record this really quick and then hopping off of the internet and watching Game of Thrones because apparently you have to watch that on the West Coast at 6 o'clock in the evening if you don't want to not get spoilers all over your timeline. So that's the plan of action for this one. You guys sent in a ton of questions, so as I've been doing lately, I am going to split this up into two parts, and part two will be tomorrow, in which I answer whatever questions I don't get to today. Let's go ahead and dive on into these, though. First question comes from Hoopay Fiasco. Hypothetically speaking, if Magic was granted permission to fire Pelinka, who does he hire to replace him? Great work, guys. Keep it up. Follow me on Twitter at Hoopay Fiasco. All right, so I think this is what would make me kind of nervous, right? Because we know the pool of candidates Magic would probably have drawn from, right? It would have been like Michael Cooper, or it would have been Byron. it would have been probably one of his old teammates, or a former player who was interested, maybe like a Chauncey Billups or something like that. I could maybe see that happening. And I think we would have run into some of the same problems that the Lakers faced last year. That said, honestly, at this point, it's not really worth talking about Magic anymore, right? Like, if he comes up, like right now, apparently he and Jeannie are going out to dinners, and he is still interested in helping the Lakers however he can. He's obviously more than welcome to doing that if Jeannie has him. We've lost a lot of hours of our lives thinking about Magic, and now we get back to the tremendous content that he provides us on a daily basis or a weekly basis from his Twitter feed. Today's gem was, I don't know who will win the series with Toronto's victory over Philadelphia to even it up, but I do know that Kawhi Leonard has been dominating the series and put on a show today, scoring 39 points. Man. The funny thing is, and others have pointed this out, is that like everything he tweets is factual. It's a fact that he is tweeting out there, right? So you can technically say that, yeah, Magic has never been wrong on Twitter. I'm kidding. All right, let's get back to these questions here. The next one here comes from Shelby_D. For Anthony and Pete, if available, what is your first, second, and third team All-NBA Lakers only teams? Past Lakers only, and level of play must be how they performed as a Laker. Love the podcast. Looking forward to your live shows. I'm going to screen grab this one and make sure Pete and I get to this because it's a really good one. I really like this question. So I'm going to grab that, and Pete and I will talk about it next time he and I talk. Next question comes from Caveat. You guys were talking about how the Lakers would work if they picked up Jimmy and Kemba. That's a great pickup, but I have a worry or two. Nothing about the potential lack of defense Kemba offers, but more of a team chemistry aspect. I worried that LeBron would have deja vu all over again when it comes to Kemba because of the type of relationship Kyrie had with LeBron. Kyrie wanted to be the guy on his own team. Kyrie left Cleveland because of it. Blah, blah, blah. So chemistry, I don't see a chemistry problem between Kemba Walker and LeBron. I think that's more of a concern with Jimmy Butler. Though I think if Jimmy, if the Lakers are winning, then I think that pretty much keeps Jimmy happy. But who knows? I think the concern here for me is on court fit. If they go with like Kemba Walker, now the next guy that they get, everybody else surrounding those guys have to be really good shooters. In order to make that fit work with Kemba, you probably need a really good defensive team around him to make it work. And you know, LeBron hasn't been taking defense very seriously for a while now. So those are concerns there. Apparently, the Lakers seem to really think they have a chance at Kawhi. I'll believe it when I see it. But as Magic Johnson will point out, he has been dominating the series, and he's gone a long way in reminding people, oh, yeah, that's right, I'm a top five player in the NBA. So that's been a lot of fun to watch, and hopefully we get to watch it on a nightly basis out here with the Lakers. Let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to keep answering your questions. All right, Ann Karnick writes, question for you and Dr. J? Oh, Dr. Jen. If you were having a boy, how big would a GoFundMe account need to be to get you to name your son Byron Scott Irwin? On one hand, Byron Scott. On the other, he was so shockingly awful that it helped me find your podcast, which is accidentally funny, as you might be the only person he helped develop. That's a great comment. Let's see. Oh, sorry, I don't have a real Lakers question. The lack of replacing Magic has me in an Anthony Irwin was right depressed funk. I'm sorry. I hate it. Jen gets that a lot. No, she doesn't. I'm never right. But best wishes to both of you on Avery. May her dad's favorite team never miss the playoffs. How big would the account be? Well, they would have to pay for my divorce fees, right? So that would have to be pretty high. You would have to also pay for child support, right? Because that would be child endangerment, naming a son Byron Scott Irwin. So it would have to be, let's see, if the GoFundMe got to about $10 million, I think I would do it. I think I would highly consider it. And then, like, do I have to keep the name too, right? Could I name the kid Byron Scott Irwin and then legally change it after the 10 mil hits my bank account? Like, that's the move there, right? But if I have to keep it, probably $10 million. And even then, that would take some legitimate convincing on Jen's part. And she loves money. So that's probably where I'll set it. I'm interested to see, like, what the lowest would have to be. I'll really think about it, but I think 10 is the absolute lowest I would go. Let's go to the next one. Bye, Magic. Absolutely love your show and analysis. I'm bummed because I'm not going to read this one. I read this one earlier today. I don't run Lakers Ground, so this was basically saying that because they were posting pro-Trump stuff on Lakers Ground, they got banned. I don't run Lakers Ground. I don't know really who does. I just don't think that's the place for that. Just in general. Next question comes from A. Marston. Hey guys, I just want to say that I really enjoy your podcast. Even when you're ranting about food, it's still super entertaining. Please include a regular sandwich segment at the end of each episode. I'll give a quick sandwich take here. I don't know if I think sandwiches are really good, obviously. I don't know if there's a more readily available bread that I would take over the Hawaiian sweet rolls. Those are really, really good. And then in terms of, like, caliber of sandwich, don't toast your bread. I'll just say that. Don't toast your bread. It messes up the roof of your mouth more often than not. It doesn't really add much texture as you would like. But yeah, give me a spicy Italian sandwich on, oh man, could you imagine that on like a roll of sweet bread? Oh, that'd be, all right, that's what I'm working on next. That's definitely coming next. My question is on the discussion you were both having about Kobe versus LeBron play styles and what you wanted LeBron to do next year. Kobe didn't really have to adjust his play to Powell, Fisher, etc., because the team was specifically built around his style and personality. LeBron's style is to have the ball in his hands for nearly every possession and to be surrounded by shooters and role men. telling him to change into a small ball five, a roll man, or a 15 and in off ball player is making LeBron change in a way that Kobe never did. Isn't it unfair to demand LeBron change his whole game to fit the roster instead of just building the roster to fit LeBron's game? Thanks, sincerely, Mayor Man is. So I think there's a point. There aspects of this are fair, right? It is fair to say, and you know, last year's roster construction failing the way that it did is kind of makes your point for you here, right? And saying that the Lakers demanded too much change from LeBron, that's I think absolutely fair, basically indisputable, really. That said, it's not even necessarily me or Pete or the Lakers who would be demanding change from LeBron. It's time. It's the sport, right? He's aging, and the Lakers and basketball, like it's forcing his hand to have to rethink some of these things. And look, I talked about this briefly with Pete, but one of my kind of theories that I'm going to do a lot of thinking about over the next, you know, few months or so, when I have a little bit more time to sit down and really think about this, is those players who dominate the ball and try to manage every aspect of the game, every variable. I think those point guards are going to, those guards or those players, unless they're prime LeBron, are going to run into some trouble because, like, that player, by definition, is not going to be perfect, right? They're going to make mistakes. They are going to get tired. Right. And then when they aren't in the game, you're asking the team to completely rethink their approach because you're on the bench. Right. So I think those teams have lower ceilings just in general than teams that look go at a approach basketball in a more team wide culture. So I think there's something there. And then for LeBron, look, he could do that when he was in his prime and he never got tired and he was just so much better physically than everybody else that he could get away with that kind of an approach, or his teams could get away with that kind of an approach because he was just that good. But as he gets older and he loses a step here and there and he gets tired more quickly and he just doesn't have the energy that he had once upon a time, then that's when the team is really going to really rethink, and he is going to have to rethink his approach to basketball. So I think you have to find that middle ground where you have a team that does highlight his strengths, and he has quite a few strengths. But you also, I think, have to have a team that if he isn't on the court, doesn't completely fall apart. And that's going to be interesting. And sometimes in order to do that, those players that you're looking at there are not going to be your stereotypical LeBron teammate. So finding that balance is going to be really interesting. And how the Lakers find a way to do that is going to be interesting to watch. Let's take another quick second here. And when we come back, I'm going to keep on keeping on. All right, next question here comes from Toscabella. What is the difference between the positions of general manager and president of basketball operations? For example, are there any areas of responsibility under the president of basketball operations that aren't under the GM? Or is a GM the only person who reports to the PBO? Many thanks. Keep up the great work. Look, you're never going to get a full understanding the way that the front office is going to run. Teams protect that religiously for good reason and for probably easily explainable reasons. But I think generally speaking, what I heard about the way that the Lakers were operating was Rob Pelinka was in charge of canvassing the league for various moves the Lakers could do. Outlining the strategies to making those moves happen, outlining what needs to be done to get, you know, a certain combination of players, those kinds of things. Like he basically outlined the path, and then it was up to Magic to actually drive and land the plane, right? Fly and land the plane. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Pelinka does that this year, where he is in charge of both, you know, putting together the menu and cooking the meal. But for all intents and purposes, the Lakers, you know, it makes me really nervous that Rob Pelinka, somebody who doesn't have very much experience, and the experience he does have so far has been questionable. He doesn't have very much experience as an NBA executive, and there's nobody else there around him who does have that experience, right? And yes, technically speaking, experience is earned by experience itself, but you know, it would be nice if the Lakers employed somebody who could kind of call Pelinka on his stuff just by, you know, when he ignores 20 some odd years of history of LeBron being in the league, you know, and opts for this weird experiment and goes so far out into the like dives so deep into that experiment that they had no, you know, traditional teammates of LeBron's, then, you know, somebody should have been there to say, no, guys, we have all this history to fall back on, to utilize. And instead of utilizing that background, that all that information, all that data, we probably shouldn't fly in the face of everything that we've learned over that time. And because they didn't, we saw how that turned out, right? The experiment failed. And then when the experiment failed, there were very few ways to actually improve the team to fit LeBron's skill set a little bit better. And, you know, a more experienced executive probably says something to Pelinka before it reaches that point of no return where the roster is set. They didn't have very much flexibility, and you went into a season with a skeleton crew of useful NBA players who had a ton of overlap in their skill sets, and you know, the season gets derailed as soon as two of those driving forces go down, right? And you know, we'll see how they handle that this year. It's makes me really nervous that the closest person to that voice of experience is going to be Kurt Rambis, seeing as he thought it was a good idea to play Kristaps Porzingis at the three and not at the five, where he finally emerged as one of the more promising young players the NBA has seen in a minute. And you know, either the Lakers are going to have to ignore the experience that they have. In Rob's case, he needs to either learn from it or just rid himself of the ideas that got him to this point. And Kurt Rambis is going to have to completely reinvent himself as an executive, having failed upward in ways that Lane Kiffin is even like, wow, this is really impressive. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Here's the thing. I'm always rooting to be wrong in these instances. When I show concern about some of the moves the Lakers might make or the direction that the organization might be going in, I hope that I'm wrong if I'm being critical of them. Unfortunately, as the one of the listeners pointed out in these questions, I haven't been wrong on a lot of these things. And here we are, right? Here we sit. So I'm going to be nervous, and I'm going to remain nervous until they prove me wrong, which they haven't done quite yet. Next question here comes from Saul the Kid. Make a lineup using only streaky shooters, players that could get hot and shoot lights out, but then be ice cold for the next four games. Try using only active players, then an all-time team. Also, how well do you think your lineup would actually do in a full season? Well, just inherently speaking, right, they would not be very consistent, and you would have to hope that their time as really good shooters is more staggered than overlapping, right? Because if they're all really streaky shooters, but they're all also on the same cycle of streakiness, where they're all really hot at the same time or they're all really cold at the same time, versus if a couple of them are hot and then a couple others are cold, and you make this work where, you know, enough of them are hot consistently enough to put together wins in any meaningful way. This is all off the top of my head, but I'd probably put Klay Thompson as a starting shooting guard. He gets as hot as anybody, right? Now, maybe he's, when he isn't as hot, he might be too good for this thing. So in that case, I'd probably put like Devin Booker is in this group as the shooting guard. Jamal Murray is the team's point guard. I would probably put him in there. For bigs, I would probably say, let's see, who's the wing? Who's a wing who gets crazy hot? Man, this is tough. This is tough. I'd probably go with like PJ Tucker or Pascal Siakam. You know, somebody like that. This is just like when they're hot, they just look like they are world beaters, right? So Siakam, I think, goes in there. Although he might not even be a good enough shooter for even by these standards. So let's go with, we'll go with PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker is the team's 3/4. The team's 4 is probably going to be a 4 who can shoot the ball well, but only in like Michael Beasley, right? Let's have some fun. Let's throw Beasley in there. That's a fun one. And then at the 5, I'd say Brooke Lopez, who unfortunately for Milwaukee has been off and on in this Boston series. This thing would be over if he was consistently good. Though it might just be a tough matchup for him. All time, I'm gonna need some time on this, and then it's more fun for me to have all time conversations alongside Pete. So I'll come back, I'll screen grab that question and answer it at a future show. Last question here comes from McNuggets 2483. This may come off as kind of a dark question, but does the injuries to the young core, Hart's tendonitis, Zoe's ankle, and Ingram's blood clot, protect the front office from themselves and allow the young core to stay on the Lakers another year to develop and show what they've got? Because all three were awesome before picking up the injuries. Like, I don't want this to come off as me being happy someone got hurt or wishing injuries on players. I know that that's not what you mean. But, yeah, to a certain extent, you know, I would imagine had those guys not gotten hurt, they probably all get traded for Anthony Davis this summer, right? And now, you know, because teams aren't going to be interested in them and because it's just not smart business practices to sell off players at their lowest value, the Lakers kind of get protected here. Obviously, I would prefer that they're healthy and the Lakers operate more intelligently than to just see them play well and hope that they play well enough to entice some other team to give them one of their more established players. But, you know, so far we haven't really seen those two things be true. And until that is shown to be true, then, you know, we just have to hope that they are healthy enough to have a full offseason, right, and come back into next year ready to pick up on how they played right before they went down. The problem that both those guys have had is as soon as they start playing well, they get hurt, right? And it's a real bummer. And so what I hope is that they come back and they have a full offseason to be able to practice and develop their games and develop their bodies and their minds and all that stuff too. And they come into next season ready to be good, you know, play better earlier in the season than they did last year. So that's definitely the hope. And I think it's a realistic hope. I think we can maybe hope for some of those things without being outright homers, but we'll see. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you, everybody, for sending in your questions. Thank you, everybody, for the kind thoughts. It's been wild how much you guys have supported us in not just with the show and the show's success thus far. And we have some big things planned for you guys that I think you're really going to be excited about. But the outpouring of support whenever I post anything about Avery or whatever. You guys are great. You guys are just the best audience, the best fans out there. So I really appreciate that. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.